Steve Dales of the World on WGN. On the telephone now is Mike Quigley, Representative 5th District, Congressman, co-chair of the Bipartisan Congressional Ukraine Caucus. And this is where I start, Congressman. Is it true that right now, as we speak pretty much, the Secretary of State, Anthony Blinken, is meeting, and other officials from the U.S., are meeting with Vladimir Zelensky?
When the meeting started or will start, but it's our understanding it was taking place today.
It is taking place today. What are they? Obviously, we know some of what they're talking about. Anyone could guess, but I will ask you, what do you believe they are talking about?
I was there a week ago in the border. I was in Poland, Romania, and Slovakia, watching the logistics of humanitarian and military aid stream into the country. I suspect that's high on the agenda is how that's working and what else the U.S. and NATO need to do to help our Ukrainian friends are attempting to. This is Orthodox Easter from a very important holiday.
Mm-hmm.
They're attempting to honor that at a very difficult time. But I suspect they're talking about that. And I also believe they're concerned. Now, the president announced that we now have a near exhaustion of his presidential drawdown authority. And this is the week he's going to be asking Congress to pass another supplemental package, which, again, I expect we will do this week.
Well, you called on the Biden administration to extend temporary protected status to Ukrainians already in the United States. President Biden then heeded your call and the call from your colleagues. I looked up the word genocide, and according to the United Nations, this is what they say, literally, a crime committed with the intent to destroy a national, ethnic, racial, or religious group in whole or in part. Is what Putin doing right now, is that genocide?
Yeah, it's genocide. A trip to Bucha would, I think, prove that point. In our conversations with the Ukrainian ambassador to the United States and members of the Rada, they inform us that they are documenting the war crimes and the genocide that's taken place. So at some point, hopefully, those will be held accountable. So all the more reason for us to do as much as we possibly can. And for those who would parse words on this, it's not just the onslaught that's taking place directly in Ukraine. You know, we're understanding that Ukrainian citizens are being virtually kidnapped and taken deep into Russia. So we're on alert to watch how that is moving forward as well.
I had not heard that previously. So do you think, I mean, this is the question that I don't know if other people on the radio or television, you get interviewed all the time on national television, even by Paul Lisnick, but we won't talk about that one. But you do get interviewed all the time, and I don't know if anyone's come out to ask you this question, but I've been asked to ask you, and it is what people are thinking. Why can't we do to Putin what he's done to others? Is he that unreachable? Not only us, but so many other nations on the planet.
And exactly what are they suggesting that we do to Putin?
I suppose do bad things to him as he has done to other people. If not, literally end his life. I may get into trouble for saying that, Congressman, but
yeah.
That's what people
feel. It's officially not the U.S. policy to use assassination. I think the best things that we can do now are the following. Totally cripple his economy, and we need NATO's help to go beyond what we've done already, and that's to shut off the pipelines, the energy coming from Russia, which is, you know, Europe is paying for this war in some respects by buying the oil and gas from Putin. I think that weakens him dramatically at home, makes it more difficult for an autocrat to function, even under his strenuous measures. I think the other thing we can do is help Ukraine win. I think there's more that we can and should do.
What should we? Can you articulate what that would be that we should be doing?
I think so far, and I give the Biden administration a lot of credit, you know, it's not a unilateral process. All along, he has needed to move NATO along as well. And even today, we're hearing stories that the Swiss are holding up the Germans' request to transfer ammunition that was originally coming from Switzerland. They don't want the Germans to transfer it. So it's tough to work with NATO as a whole. Bottom line, we need to forward posture all the weapons of war and ammunition that they need. And that would include, I believe, more heavy armor, more artillery, planes, drones, specific types of drones, so that it's not a, okay, now we'll give you this. Okay, now we'll give you this. That it's a steady flow. Because among the things the our counterparts in the RADA tell us is that they believe, the Ukrainians believe, that Putin is trying to wait out and make sure and see at what point do they run out of ammunition. Does the resolve from the West end at some point in time? I think we make it clear that it simply doesn't. That we're going to forward posture everything they need, and it's going to be a steady flow. It has been enhanced pretty dramatically, and we're almost there. I think the other thing we do is a pretty dramatic move. You know, those pathways out, the humanitarian pathways out, are blocked. At some point in time, you've got to find a way to open them up, or you'll see wholesale loss of life. And I think the only way to do that is either giving them the planes to do it, or having no-fly zones, at the very least on a limited basis, to allow people to evacuate.
Well, America
had 5 million evacuations there.
Well, America's been reluctant to do what you just said. And there's two thoughts on this. And I've seen the talking heads on television talk about it. And one thought is, be strong. And Putin respects that, and he'll back down. The other thought is just the opposite, that now Putin's threats to us or our allies, which the same to us, would become more than just threats. How do you feel?
You know, everything we have talked about doing was at one point viewed as too escalatory, right? Well, once vices are now habits. Well, all those things that we were concerned about doing, the very severe sanctions and the severe offensive weapons, well, at one point, well, you can't do that. Well, now they're standard practice. So, you know, you can't let Putin's threats keep you from trying to stop a genocide that's taking place here. And I guess what the other thing that bothers me when we hear people talk about this is they say, you know, we're going to help them every way we can, but, you know, we're not going to do this, that, or the other thing. And the bottom line is because they preface it all by saying because they're not a member of NATO. And I just don't get it. Should we care more about that child buried under, you know, there's a child buried under rubble in Ukraine? Should we care more about children in Moldova, which is right next door, or Poland, or Romania, or Hungary, or Slovakia? You know, it's the same sort of crime. And at some point in time, we've got to push back. Because if anyone imagines that Putin will stop here, if allowed to continue, they're mistaken. Because those border countries rightly feel that they are next.
In theory, if you or I commit a crime, we pay a price for that. The war crimes that you mentioned earlier and genocide, and you used, after I asked you, you said, yes, I can use that word. What price does he pay? The Russian people may pay, but they didn't do anything. What price does Putin pay?
You know, it's typically, as you know, in history, this has been very difficult to bring people to justice. You've seen a few instances of this in war crimes in our lifetime, but they're few and far between, and they take a long time. Because, quite honestly, there's not a lot of teeth there. No one's going to go to Moscow and pick up President Putin and deliver him to The Hague to stand trial. Sometimes you see these things happen in absentia, but enforcement is far more difficult. I think what we should be doing now is what the Ukrainians are doing with other entities attempting to help, documenting these war crimes, tying them to Putin to the extent possible, winning this war, and then finding a way to hold him accountable. I'll just be honest, it's not as easy as we'd like it to be, and it's something I think that in the, you know, when this is over, we have to look for ways to make that and find ways to hold people accountable.
People do text their questions, and one of those questions is about refugees, which I also wanted to ask you about. So you've talked about it, and so has the president and others, but is it really easier? So we've got people on the Mexican border from Ukraine waiting to get into this country. You know more about what's going on there than I do, but you talk, not necessarily you, but our government tends to talk about how easy it is, but it doesn't seem to be so easy.
Well, the expedited process is just being put into place. The president talked about it at the end of the week. So we're heading back to D.C. this week, and that's top of the list of trying to find out exactly how it's going to move forward. As you said, the president did grant temporary protective status for the nearly 30,000 Ukrainians currently here in the United States. Two things. First, we have to start thinking about doing that for all those who have fled war-torn countries, right, in Africa, in Yemen, in Afghanistan. And we have to figure out a way to make that permanent, that makes people, to the extent possible, comfortable. That's the kind of country we're supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in terms of the other commitment, second, that's the 100,000 refugees that the president has set a number at. You know, I think they need to put that process in place and start to bring those refugees here. Poland has accepted something in around 2.7 million refugees, and not in tent cities. They've actually brought those refugees into their homes and incorporated them into their society. We saw it to a lesser extent in some of the other border countries when I was there, and it's the right thing to do. Because the numbers, sadly, may continue to rise. You know, we'd like to think that you know, this is going the right way and that Ukraine will win this war. I think Russia can't win it, but if you're defining victory, the fact is Ukrainian cities are being blown off the face of the earth. You know, people are dying, refugee numbers are going to increase, and we have to find a way not just to help our allies who are taking in our refugees, but to bring in as many as we can as well.
I know you have to go here. I have one more quick question about Ukraine, then I want to switch gears quickly, and then off back to the meeting you go. Could we disable Russian satellites? I think that's an interesting question.
Yeah, I have to think about that. I mean, look, there's a lot of things that Russia uses in this conflict. And you'd have to start thinking about what, you know, what we've done so far, as you know, in our policies to give Ukraine the capabilities to conduct this war. You have to ask yourself about the capabilities of the weapons they might need to disable the satellites and what role those satellites are playing. Right now, this war in the East is moving forward, and there are things they need in a higher priority. And I want to make sure they get what they need.
Yeah, I understand that. Okay, I want to switch gears a little bit. Oh, one more question that came to mind. This is what I wanted to ask you. I almost forgot, but this is what I want to ask you. It's a yes or no question. Are there things that the United States is doing that you know about that you cannot tell me about?
Well, there's always things that I serve in the House Select Committee on Intelligence. There's always things I can't
talk about. Of course, but I mean regarding Ukraine specifically.
Yeah, I can't honestly.
Yes or no?
Because of the, I can't answer that just because I pledged not to talk about things. Because put yourself in my place. If I say something yes, something no, it can be assumed that then therefore there must be. So the best way for me to answer those questions is I just can't answer them to fulfill my my oath not to talk about all matters relating to Intel.
All right. So let me ask you a completely different question as I switch gears, and I know you only have like a few minutes here. There's a committee, a new committee, Quigley for Chicago. It could be Quigley for president. I've known you for a very long time. Had you thought about running for president?
No. That's a quick no.
You gave me a yes or no there. How about for mayor of the city of Chicago?
Look, the only reason you saw a committee formed is that we took a poll and we had to file appropriate documents because of that. And I'll tell you again straight out, I have been focused on Ukraine and the appropriation process. Part of that appropriation process is getting Chicago the resources it needs. But look, I'm an appropriator and I'm on the Intel committee. I'm very focused on what's taking place with the greatest conflict in Europe since the Second World War. And that's where I just have to leave it. I've got to deal with the issues of the day and worry about other things later.
All right. Some of those issues of the day occur in the 5th District. I'm talking about carjackings and crime and all of that. Literally outside your door in some cases. I know where your office is, right? And it's in a nice neighborhood right outside your office. Some things have happened. Do you think we need to do far better in Chicago as far as crime?
Sure. And I'll just focus in the brief time I have with the fact of, you know, what can D.C. do there? Because that's my job.
Mm-hmm.
First, it's a lot tougher to commit an armed robbery or to carjack without guns. But as you know, there's a plentiful supply of illegal guns through trafficking that has to be stopped. So the feds can help working with local law enforcement to go after that. It's a little limited what the law allows. Robin Kelly has a bill in D.C. that I'm supporting that specifically goes after illegal gun trafficking. Second, we've got to give local law enforcement the resources they need. Part of the package we passed in the earmark packages gave Chicago Police Department some of the resources they need to work better with others. We need universal background checks to make it harder for the people who shouldn't get guns to get those guns. There's a whole slew of other things, but the bottom line is we've got to give local law enforcement the resources they need, and that includes the laws to make trafficking guns something they can enforce.
Well, we'll leave it there. I just want to thank you also for everything you do for animal welfare, sir. Mike Quigley, 5th District U.S. Representative, thank you so much for joining us, and happy Greek Easter to you.
Thank you. Take care, everyone.
Thank you. Bye-bye.